This is the Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue. The second hour of the Friday edition is here. With Paul Kuharsky in Brentwood, Jonathan Hutton with you in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Chad Withrow back with us next week after furlough this week. Every Friday to kick off the 11 o'clock hour, Clay Travis joins us, presented by the Home Loan Expert and thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay with Outkick and Fox Sports Radio. Clay, good morning, man. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. How are y'all?
Doing great. I want to start with a topic that you approached this morning about 25% of fans allowed in an NFL stadium this coming season. But let's, for instance, throw out the scenario that in some big cases, you have a very large contingency of season ticket holders who have already paid certain premiums or payments this offseason to get in the door. How do you determine the 25% of your fan base that actually is allowed through the gate to begin with? What would you do?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And I think it's one that I just wrote about on Outkick. The question of whether or not football will be played seems to have pretty much been answered. Now, there was a debate that went on for a couple of months. Oh, are we going to play football? That was the number one question that most people had, honestly, in my audience, as soon as the NBA shut down and the NCAA tournament didn't happen and everything else. A lot of people automatically jumped to what's going to happen with the NFL and college football. And I believe we basically answered that question. There is going to be college football and there is going to be the NFL in some way. That's kind of a binary, right? You can either be yes or no on whether there's going to be football this fall. And I believe the answer is yes. The more complicated question is, will there be fans present? And that's a yes or no in some way. But then once, let's say you say yes, then the question becomes, okay, what does that look like? And that gets very complicated very quickly. For instance, I am a season ticket holder, but if social distancing is required, then let's say you can only get 25% of the seats that are filled. And I don't know what the percentages would be, but let's just say 25% because it's relatively easy. Well, I think the super rich are going to get in. Luxury suites are going to be allowed. I would be stunned beyond belief if they aren't. Why are they going to allow them? Well, they're going to say luxury suites have walls. They have their own bathroom. They can privately feed people. You don't have to go stand in line for anything. And you're sort of socially distanced by nature with space by and large, which is what you're paying for in the luxury suites. So I would bet luxury suites will be open. That's a huge portion of the revenue. Paul may know. I would guess probably on a random Sunday that 25%, this is a guess, that 25% of the overall revenue in a football stadium is coming from what luxury suites cost. Again, that's a guess. I don't know for sure. But that wouldn't surprise me, and I would guess the percentages are similar, depending on how many suites there are at stadiums all over the country. But then what do you do? I'm a season ticket holder. Do I get access to only 2.5 games out of the 10? You know, I think they're probably not going to have crowds for preseason, so let's knock it down to 8. Do I only get to go to 2 games? How do you deal with some of the complexities of social distancing when I go with my kids? Does it really make sense that I would need to socially distance from my kids when we're riding in the car to the game together, when we're living in the house together? You can see all of these complexities that arise. And the whole question that I put up was, would you pay 4 times as much for tickets if you knew that would allow you to get into every game? Do you refund all the season ticket holders and just say, hey, only 25% can attend games, but you're going to charge 4 times as much to try to make up for the revenue that you're losing? Because keep in mind, right now there hasn't been any suggestion that Ryan Tannehill is going to make less than $30 million a year, that Derrick Henry is going to make less than $10 million a year. So if I own a team, I'm trying to maximize my revenue because otherwise that's money that's coming out of my pocket that I'm losing. So these are fascinating and difficult questions that frankly are without precedent right now. but I think they're the kind of questions that need to be debated and talked about amongst fans as you contemplate what the season might look like in a Nissan Stadium setting.
Where do you put the PR in this, Clay? Because the league already takes a pretty good hit over cost. And I know you're going to charge what people will pay and all of that. But you hear over and over, you know, hey, the cost of me taking my family of four to a pro football game is pretty exorbitant. I'm only able to go to a game a year, or I can't go to a game a year. Now, if you're a season ticket holder who's been paying it for, you know, 10 years or since 99, and they choose to say, hey, we'll take the people who can pay four times what the cost of the ticket is, I think the backlash would be pretty strong, and you'd be good because you've got the money for it. But the people who maybe are already straining to pay that season ticket cost, the revolt would be pretty strong. Where do you balance the PR hit versus the making the money to pay the Ryan Tannehill cost?
It's a great question, and I don't think it's an easy question. So my first position is, if you told me, Clay Travis, you are in charge of figuring out what the NFL is going to do with fans, I think luxury suites is easy. Would you guys both agree that luxury suites, you're probably going to be able to get those guys in?
I think they're going to have to reduce the number of people in the suite is what I've read. You know, Atlanta put out a plan that I think pissed off the league, but kind of spelled out what the Falcons would do. And I think it included open luxury suites, but with fewer people in them.
I also wonder with this discussion, if they make a rule, let's say they limit the number of fans, which we expect them to do. If they make a rule much like they did with opening the facilities, where you can have, what was it, Paul's, 50% of the facilities open or 75 total people. So if it's 25% of your stadium or a certain amount, certain number, thousand of people, instead of just saying sections of the stadium, it's an actual physical person coming through the gate. I think that would also hurt that.
Yeah, well, the luxury suites, the argument I would make is, because you've got your own food and you've got your own walls inside of there and you've got your own bathroom, arguably you could say that those people are interacting less with everybody else in a stadium. They've got their own entrance with the elevators. You can make that argument as well. And I think they're going to find a way to do that because I think the revenue is so substantial. Those are the people that they're going to try to keep the most happy. The way that I would spin it, Paul, is if the NFL was conducting me here, I would say, look, we know 39 million people-ish have lost their jobs. A lot of people who have NFL season tickets have told us that they want to keep their season tickets, but they can't afford to keep them right now. We know we're in unprecedented and uncharted waters when it comes to the financial status of many people around the country. Therefore, we are going to refund every single dollar for season ticket holders for this season. And then for the season ticket holders who have the money and want to do it, we are going to charge them four times what usually we would charge. And if they want to pay that, those are the people who we're going to allow to come into the stadium. That to me seems like, if you present it well, and I'm not saying Roger Goodell is going to be capable of presenting it well, but that to me seems like a decent way to present it, because I'm a season ticket holder. And you're right, I'm in a decent financial position where I can afford to make the cut that check for my season tickets and not need to worry about it. But I bet there's a lot of season ticket holders for the Titans out there, or the University of Tennessee for that matter, who are listening to us right now and they're thinking to themselves, boy, you know, I could really use that extra couple of $1,000 that I was spending on tickets right now if I could get it refunded to me by the team. I'd rather have that money and I'll stay home and I'll watch the games on television. I think there's probably a lot of people in that position right now who don't necessarily want to publicly advertise the fact that they're struggling financially, maybe in a way that they haven't before. This would allow them to get their money back. They can then say, well, I'm not paying for it. They can puff their chest out and say, like, well, they think they're crazy if they're going to get me to pay four times as much money to go to a game. But it kind of gives them an opportunity to vent while at the same time they're kind of excited that they got their money back, but they don't have to, they can pretend that they're angry about it, but really it's sort of a false anger as opposed to a real anger. I think that's probably a viable position, you know, in general.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Clay Travis with us as we continue our conversation. He's presented by the Home Loan Expert, thehomeloanexpert.com.
Clay, Candace Story Lee, installed now as the permanent AD, not interim. Seems a lot of the institutional change that needs to happen at Vanderbilt needs to happen with the people above her to allow her to do it. But what are you expecting with somebody from in-house at Vanderbilt in terms of any potential for real change?
I don't know about change, but I know that David Williams wanted her to be his successor. And I would imagine that he would be ecstatic if he were still with us and was finding out about her getting this job. I think the challenge at Vanderbilt in general is a challenge that has existed at Vanderbilt for a very long time, which is athletics are a relatively small part of how Vanderbilt sees itself reflected in society. And I think you have to give credit to Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt baseball because they've just taken Vanderbilt baseball to a level that, frankly, no Vanderbilt sports program that I'm aware of has ever attained in the history of the school. But so far, he has been the exception rather than the rule in terms of being able to sustain long-lasting athletic excellence at Vanderbilt. And, you know, I've said this for a long time before. I think on your show, Vanderbilt is – look, I'm a double alum. So I've got two graduate degrees from Vanderbilt. I love the place. I'd be ecstatic if my kids went there. But I don't think most Vanderbilt fans expect, really, in their heart of hearts, to be legitimate contenders in most SEC sports. I think they would like to be, but I don't think they ever expect to be. And I don't really see anything changing in terms of Vanderbilt committing to facilities in a way that's going to change that. I do think they should be better in basketball. I think football is always going to be a struggle, but I believe in general the model should be Stanford, right? Where you're trying to excel and have a great deal of excellence across all sports as a part of having a full and thorough academic experience. That's who I'd be looking to if I were Vanderbilt right now. The difference is the Pac-12 schools are not the SEC. You know, Stanford is the best school in the Pac-12. But there are other institutions in the Pac-12 that are at least somewhat similar to Stanford. There are none that are remotely similar, really, to Vanderbilt in the SEC. And as long as you're the only private school in a conference of athletic behemoths, you're always going to be a little bit the odd man out.
Clay, Joe Rogan signs the $100 million contract with Spotify for his podcast distribution. His entire podcast library dating back 11 years, now goes to Spotify as well as all future shows. And now with podcasts, Spotify doesn't have to pay a third party. They now have exclusive contracts with talent. They have their own programming. It's actually making money off of each listen off of the ads. And if you go by what Rogan put out there, that his podcast recently surpassed, 150 million downloads. By the way, they charge, they can make $3 million per month reportedly off of the podcast alone. What do you make of the deal, and is it now Spotify and Apple and everyone else in the podcast world?
Well, look, that's basically just the audio business, right? Everybody is in the audio business now, and I like to see as much money spent in the audio business as possible. I have been of the opinion, and I think I was even saying this back when I was on 3HL, that you could easily see the trajectory in which we were headed, which is you will get in your car if you're not already doing it and you will say, play the Midday 180. Or you will get in your car and you will say, play Clay Travis or play Outkick or play Joe Rogan or play Howard Stern or whoever it is. And it won't really matter what time of the day you're in your car. And by the way, I think it'll be any listening device, right? You're going for a jog. That's really what a podcast is. But I think we're not very far away from when you're just able to orally say, give me the latest, whatever it is, and it just shows up and you start listening to it without even having to click anything, right? And then the distribution mechanisms become less significant. I think what you're starting to see, and I wonder whether this is going to happen, is whether we're going to see like a premium cable-like model for the podcast universe where, you know, you go to Spotify and you have to be a member in order to get access to everything that Joe Rogan does. And I don't know whether that's going to happen. But to me, it's sort of akin to what happened when Howard Stern went to satellite radio. Satellite radio gave Howard Stern a massive amount to basically be the linchpin of why people were going to get satellite radio. And I think you're going to see, you know, kind of what I already see, right? I sit down and do a show called Outkick the Show, be sitting in front of Facebook and Periscope, and I've been doing it for years, pretty much every day around 2 or 2:30, right? That show that I do, and I probably shouldn't even say this, but I will, that show that I do, Outkick the Show, I make more money off of that than I do off of the television show that I do on FS1. And I think that stuns a lot of people. There, it's like a holy crap moment. But if you think about it, there's zero cost, basically, associated with me sitting down in front of Periscope and Facebook and going live and being able to talk directly to my audience. When you think about me going through a television studio, they got to reroute that all the way back through L.A. They got to spend God knows how much on my home television studio. Like, I'm a small part of the business that is the Lock It In television show. I'm the entirety of the business that is me sitting down in front of Periscope and Facebook. And so I think there are a lot of people out there that are going to recognize that there are opportunities for them to monetize their content without needing to have millions of people consuming it. Certainly for somebody like Joe Rogan, props to him for creating an audience that's that monstrous and that massive for what he does. But if you just go look at my Twitter feed right now, and pretty much every video I put up does 20 or 25,000 views, and some of them do 100,000 views, and that's just in Twitter. Well, that's valuable, right? Being able to produce an audience like that. So I think there are a lot of fascinating opportunities out there, and I think the distribution costs are close to moving to zero for much content, both audio and video.
Are you betting Tiger and Peyton or Phil and Brady this weekend?
I'm going Tiger. I think he lost last time to Phil, right? We're about to talk about this on Lock It in 20 minutes, interestingly, at noon, I guess, in 30 minutes. We're going to make our gambling picks, and that video will be up here digitally shortly. But I'm going on Tiger Woods. I don't think he'll lose to Phil again. I like Peyton as being a little bit better than Brady, so I think Tiger will find a way to get it done.
Appreciate you, man. Always great catching up, and we'll chat next week. Enjoy the weekend.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me. Thanks a lot.
Clay Travis, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com.
Our friend Dan Dockich, with a very interesting idea about athletes. A lot of us in many businesses giving money back pretty much because of COVID. Midday 180, we're taking furloughs. Why don't athletes give a percentage back? We'll discuss next.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Lunchtime coming up, Nashville-style hot pork. It is available at Edley's Barbecue today and every Friday, 12 South and in Sylvan Park. Delicious options as well in Sylvan Park across the street at Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. You can have the big-ass nachos, the Cantina salad, the burrito bowl. Hot chicken taco is available there as well. Poncho and Lefty's, tacos, tequila, beer. So what is Dockage up to now, Paul?
Well, he just had a simple tweet. Said, why don't professional athletes give back a percentage of salary like the rest of us? I mean, I think in some sports, I don't know if it's give back. NBA is not going to be collecting their full salaries, correct? Just like right. we are not collecting our full salaries. I'm not sure about NHL. I can't imagine they're getting full salaries. Baseball is not going to get full salaries. I mean, they're looking for full salaries for games played. NFL is certainly not on the table. NFL is expecting their full salaries and may play a full season. So we will see. But I think it's a fair question. It's not being talked about the way it's being talked about for the rest of us in terms of, hey, the economy's hurting and we need to give some back. And I think there's always the other side of this is
give some back where though? Like,
yeah, and the owners
give it back to the owners?
Yeah, give it back to the billionaire owners. I mean, Cumulus owners are more well off than we are, but also they're publicly held businesses that we're talking about in a lot of cases as opposed to.
But our upper management corporate wide are taking significant pay cuts.
Yes.
Based on what we're told.
Are the Steinbrenners, are these other owners, they're taking losses, but they're taking losses against huge fortunes. So I'm less sympathetic to them than I am to other businesses that are hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, my question to Dan would be, take pay cuts for who? Or you know, right? Like, is the NFL going under if the players don't take pay cuts and give it back to the league to keep it propped up? I don't see that. Like, no. Just as an independent business, the way it's structured, you're putting more money in the owner's pockets if you did it that way.
And there are also other things. I mean, NFL players have short careers. Say they didn't play this year, they played a shorter year. They don't take the pounding. So, you know, they'll get some time back, but still, your prime earning years are your prime earning years. Your age still goes up. I think GMs would discount that a little bit, but you know, if this is the year that throws you from 29 to 30, you're still a 30-year-old football player. 30-year-old football players are of less value in the league than guys in their late 20s, generally speaking. And you know, it's going to be hard to now say, oh, all of a sudden 30 doesn't mean what it used to mean because you played 10 less games before you turned 30,
right, yeah.
or whatever the case is there. But I think baseball wise, he's probably targeting baseball players there. And if baseball players play half a season in front of empty stadiums, I would go back to the owners thing and I'd be more willing to let owners take a hit. And I would say that the players are, as some of the outspoken players have said, taking more of a risk than the owners are. And I'm sympathetic to the players. I don't think the tone was right from Snell. I wouldn't lead with the hell I'm getting every penny or I'm not playing or whatever it was. I would come out more like the Washington Nationals pitcher, who was at Doolittle, that came out more with like, hey, there are a lot of concerns that are going unaddressed here that I need answers to before I'm going to trot out there.
Well, it's two lines of thinking, though. Doolittle's thinking of it from the health and safety side.
Where he's got a lot of respiratory issues.
And Snell is thinking of it from the paycheck that he's owed. Yeah, like, I understand both sides of it, honestly. I mean, but the difference with me there, I would let my union speak for me. Right? Like, that. Let your union do the talking here instead of the individual. And then go from there. Because you're not going to win the argument as an individual in Major League Baseball. It comes down to the owners and the union itself that would actually negotiate this.
Yeah, unless you're echoing the union's themes, or unless the union gives out bullet points for you all to hit. I agree, and we've talked about this earlier. The unions have been pretty quiet. And I don't know that this is the time you want the unions to be.
Until Tuesday night.
Unions usually are too noisy, and in this instance, the unions are far too quiet.
The heads of the unions for Major League Baseball, for NFL and NBA will be on Real Sports Tuesday night on HBO.
That's going to be a news-making episode. And
all together with Brian Gumbel.
I know what we'll be talking about Wednesday to lead the show.
Yes. Yep. Reed, your thoughts.
So I have a theory about this. I think the Major League Baseball owners have done a great job of getting propaganda out there. I think the unions are aware that there's a scenario that could play out without fans being in the stands and the owners still end up making money or breaking even for the season. So I think that message has been put out there from the union among the players to kind of cut this off at the pass, that if Major League Baseball does not return anytime soon, that it's strictly because the players aren't willing to take a pay cut.
Yeah. I understand that too. And
taking
I also,
control of the conversation.
I also have, I take issue of, and this is a broader discussion point. I take issue with those who complain or make a point to note Jeff Bezos is worth $150 billion and he only donated $200 million to the COVID fight. Now, I'm using that as an example. Right. Okay. I can't tell you how much, I can't remember how much he donated, but whatever. My point overall is, why are you dissing on the guy who donates instead of the other billionaires who I haven't seen step up at all across this globe? Like, if you don't donate anything, you're never mentioned and you're never called out for the low amount, if you consider it a low amount. But if you're a billionaire who donates to the cause and it's perceived as only $200 million because you have $150 billion, you're called on the carpet for it.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with the whole thing, you know, because, at least in Christianity, it's a tenet that you don't advertise what you're doing.
You tithe?
Well, no. There could be plenty of people doing plenty of things, not wanting it to be for PR, not wanting to advertise, mm-hmm. and that's fine. So I think that our tendency is to say, well, look at this guy. We know he donated $200 million, and then we compare him to the guy who we haven't heard from. Well, we don't know what the guy that we haven't heard from has or has not done.
Does the guy we haven't heard from get called out, though? My point is, there's a quick response on social media in this day and age to jump on the person that's trying to do something good. It doesn't. I learned last year, if you give $5 or $100, it means a lot to the bottom lines. And that's all. That's my point here. If you're asking for the Major League Baseball players to give something back, I mean, again, who's to say they're not doing that in some way? And they lose out on all of this year if they don't play at all.
Yeah. But in terms of charitable giving, I am very anti judging people. I think there are plenty of people that give quietly, and that's perfectly fine. And I'm more suspicious sometimes of people who give noisily. Either way, I think a lot of very rich people give a ton, and I tend to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I don't really care about their reasons. Some of them are for tax breaks, but no matter your motivation, if you're giving, you're giving. And I think there's a lot of philanthropy that goes on with the very rich. A lot of things are going on because of them. And I think there's a lot of philanthropy, quite frankly, that goes on from the not rich at all. I mean, there are plenty of people that don't have a lot who find a way to give something. And yes. I see it in kids. I mean, my family is just fine. And my kid passes a homeless guy in the street and he wants us to sell our house immediately or invite them in. So I think there's a lot of good that goes on there, and fundraisers that come together, and the way this town reacts to the tornado and anything that goes wrong here.
It's crazy.
It's just also, you know, where do you throw the COVID money, or the stimulus? We've seen, you know, it's hard. It's easy to help big business. It's not so easy to help small business, and that's something that's kind of broken in this country, unfortunately, and hard to do. You can't walk down 12th South and hand checks door to door to the kind of businesses that we want to make sure survive, and that's complicated work.
Just got a text from Austin Price. He had something come up, and will be unable to join us when we come back. So when we do return, Paul, let's discuss the Titans salary cap implications with no fans. Kind of playing off of what we discussed with Clay, but under the circumstance that there would not be fans in attendance and what that would mean to the Titans moving forward, or not just the Titans, teams moving forward on the bottom line salary cap number a year from now. Midday with Eddie Cuda by Edlis Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. with Paul Koharski in Brentwood. Jonathan Hutton here with you in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Chad Withrow makes it mean that we're all back together on Tuesday. I nearly said Monday. We're off on Monday. And on Monday, by the way, we have the Titans throwback games airing throughout the day right here on 104.5 The Zone through Titans Radio. Chargers, Chiefs, Browns, Falcons, Patriots, Ravens, all those wins aired consecutively throughout the day, starting at 7 a.m. It's all presented by Pinnacle Bank online on Twitter, at Titans Banking. And we will end the day with Super Bowl I, Chiefs and Packers from January 15th, 1967, a CBS broadcast in its entirety. Paul, let's discuss the salary cap implications that could happen. This is a hypothetical that could happen if there are no fans in attendance, because the revenue would drop. Schefter was reporting somewhere between $50 and $80 million. We've heard it mentioned roughly $100 million per team on other reports. But that significantly affects the next year's salary cap because it's collectively bargained, and there's a trade-off there with how much you make versus how much the cap goes up or down the following year. And you wrote about this at paulkoharski.com.
Yeah, I mean, it would really hurt. I looked at what the Titans have next year. So if you went halfway between the numbers that Schefter said, he said 30 to 80. So I took it down 55, which would get it to 143 next year. Titans, according to Spotrac, currently have 48 players under contract for 2021 worth 136. They'd have, in this scenario, they'd have $6.6 million of cap room next year without Derrick Henry, Jonnu Smith, Jayon Brown, Daquan Jones under contract, and Vic Beasley, who's a complete wild card. We don't know, you know, if they're going to want him back or not. I mean, that's a sloppy, difficult situation. If this came to fruition, players would be getting cut all over the league. This would seal Malcolm Butler's fate for sure, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, it's not going to happen this way. And Andrew Brandt, the former executive from Green Bay who writes for Sports Illustrated, wrote about it. There's a clause in the CBA that I wrote about that kind of allows for them to negotiate a way for it not to plummet. And so this would take the NFL and the NFLPA right back to the negotiating table less than a year after they agreed on this new CBA. And basically the consensus is what they would do is they would borrow against future year cap increases to kind of flatten it, maybe a minimal reduction, or maybe to keep it roughly the same, in order for this not to happen, because it would be so unhealthy for both sides.
Well, two things I picked up on the article. So here's what comes to mind for me. I don't think it would keep the Titans from negotiating contracts as extensions, because you could formulate a plan to where you can get that number down in year one or whatever, what have you. You can structure it to where you can make it work for Jayon, Jonnu, Daquan. I don't know who else we're going to leave in there, but for the sake of argument, I think the extensions can be negotiated. I think bigger contracts, like, here are the contracts that come to mind: Lawan, Saffold, Byard, Butler. Those four names right off the top of my head that have signed either recent big extensions or were brought in on contract deals with big money a couple of years ago. So those are the four that come to mind for restructuring. And the one area I thought that you missed out on, and maybe I'm not right on this either, this is a TV network contract year. So if you negotiate a new deal with your networks, that also goes to the salary cap, and it helps flatten the curve on the drop from revenue you might get on the salary cap next year from home games if the TV deal is negotiated and you have an influx of money coming in.
Well, I would think that Schefter's factoring that in when he's saying that people are telling him it's in line to go down 30 to 80, despite the new TV deal. Yeah. I would suspect that he's saying there. But again, I don't think they'll let it happen. I don't think they can afford to let it happen. But it's a dangerous time to be coming up on the end of a contract. I think it's a dangerous time to be Derrick Henry. I would not be anxious if I was a team to be signing people to extensions.
Right.
I don't think it's a good time to be Derrick Henry. I don't see a lot of extension stuff happening. Maybe I'm naive here. I'm not an expert on the economics of it, and I'm certainly not an expert on the contract end of it. But I would not be running to give out bonus money right now when I know I may not have ticket money.
But we're only a month removed.
Or the ticket money that I have coming in may be going back out.
Are we not a month removed from John Robinson, though, saying that he wanted to keep some of this money for extension purposes?
Yes. But when he said he wanted to keep some of this money for extension purposes, he didn't know that he might have no fans in the building.
COVID was more rampant then than it is now.
Yeah,
we were just starting the lockdown then.
I don't know that the consideration of the economics of the league year for 2020 was in full blast then, yeah, like it is now. Also, I don't know that those conversations have been had. I'm a little bit surprised that people are signing draft picks. At this point, the Titans have signed one. I wouldn't be touching my draft picks right now. Would you be giving out? I mean, it's not much guaranteed money for Laurel Murchison. But I don't know if you've got a top 10 draft pick, I would be reluctant to go at this stage.
Or if camp opens on time and you don't have them signed, then they have the leverage again.
But the leverage for what? I mean, it's pretty much a mapped report. Out. Yeah, but it's pretty much a mapped out thing. The contract slot, there's not that much wiggle room.
Coming up, second half of the show, David Reed has the headlines for you, including what David Poyle had to say about the potential NHL playoff format. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.